Fast lane when I pass in the street, bag of money in the passenger seat. Simple's been asking for me on the road from the west to the east. Way up, I might never come down, cause the coast racking up the flight miles.
Welcome to Across the Ring. My name is William Mayhem Michaels.
This is the scientist, Carl Trupfer, and today we're here with Rudy Rogers. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, bro. Before we get started, Rudy, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, man?
Rudy Rogers, I'm from Cold Lake, Alberta, Canada. I've been wrestling. This is going to be my 14th year wrestling altogether. I also like nice walks on the beach, nice glass of scotch, you know? Same old, same old.
All right. Starting out, before you became a wrestler, at some point, you were introduced to wrestling as a fan. So how exactly did that happen? Who introduced you and how'd that come about?
So that's actually kind of funny. I was introduced to wrestling at the ripe old age of 2 months old. My mother used to work graveyard shifts, and professional wrestling was my babysitter. She would sit me in a car seat while she was able to get catch any sleep that she can, and would turn on Monday Night Raw and any taped WWE events, and I'd sit there and watch wrestling. It kind of programmed me into it and kind of just got me hooked for life. Didn't find indie wrestling though until 2010. I was in high school.
Yeah. What was your first indie show?
It was actually Mach 1 Professional Wrestling. It was the school I ended up training with. They ran a fundraiser for my high school, and I found out I was on the wrestling team. I was captain of the wrestling team. And so when I found out they were doing something wrestling for us, I was like, I'm in 100%, wanted to go to it. Showed up, watched the show and everything, and my athletic director introduced me to the owner of the company. His name was Johnny, and God rest his soul, he's been mentioned on the WWE Network a few times. And for whatever reason, I shook his hand at the end of the night and don't know what came over me or gave me the guts to say it, but I looked at him. I was like, you know what? Someday that's going to be me in the ring for you guys. And he looked at me. He was like, well, we have a school. And I had no idea they had a wrestling school. So following Monday, he asked me to come by, and I hopped right in with the guys. I sat there and talked to them for a couple hours. And I'll go into a side little tangent. I know you guys like my tangents, I guess. Showed up to the school that Monday and talked to him about pricing and all that for wrestling school. And he kind of laid it out for me. I'm single parent household, and I was a high school student. I didn't have any cash. I couldn't afford the wrestling school. And he basically kind of left it at that for the day. Next day I texted him. I was like, hey, thanks for your time. I can't do it right now. Can't afford it. Hopefully in the future we could do something. And messaged me back, hey, come to class on Wednesday. We can talk. We'll work out a deal. Everybody told me not to. I showed up and sat there and talked to them. And he handed me a stack of flyers that came up to about my knee, which is pretty short still. And you're going to be my PR guy. Anytime I hand you a stack of flyers, pass them out for me. Anytime anything needs to be cleaned up, you clean it up. You come to training as often as you want or don't come at all. And then I ended up being there 6 days out of the week, sometimes 7 days out of the week. He was not able to get rid of me.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I paid for my training, was basically just cleaning up, passing out flyers for them. They had weekly shows. I was there at every show on Fridays, and I would always help set up. I would be the guy that sat there and took tickets, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, dude, that's pretty cool. You know, I know you're based out of California. You're SoCal right now. What are some of the major organizations you've worked with since you've started?
Mach 1 was the first place that I ever got to work with. That was Matt School led into Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. I was a Championship Wrestling from Hollywood guy. I was on TV for a good little bit. I worked with Matt Stryker, Scorpio Sky. You guys know him as LA Knight now. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Peter Avalon, all these guys are on that. I was always here in SoCal. I never got the opportunity to work on their show. I got to be around them though, be in their locker room a couple times. Battleground Professional Wrestling, back when it was in California. I know you've been out there in Colorado for them. There was a place called Fans United Wrestling back then. Oh god, you're gonna make me really dig into my memory now. Jeez.
A lot of places. I mean, it's hard to name them all. You don't want to leave anybody off the list, but man, you also don't want to just make a podcast of listing wrestling companies.
To have at the time, we were able to go and wrestle shows in a weekend and just be able to hit set them all up in the same towns kind of thing and just get everything going. But was a really big hotbed back then.
So you mentioned you worked TV before and some of the guys you've worked with. How was that different from starting out with the indie scene and kind of jumping on TV?
Well, that was the thing. I was starting out on the indie scene a little bit, but my school being Mach 1 Professional Wrestling led into Hollywood. So it was almost one and the same. I was paying a lot of my dues while I was on TV at the time. So a lot of some of my first matches were on TV. That was like the crazy thing. I was a 15-year-old kid in high school wrestling on TV. Probably wasn't supposed to be, but I was still working on TV at the time. First, just because weird, because again, you're the 15-year-old kid in a locker room. Everybody kind of doesn't really want you there because it's weird. It was just kind of a weird combination at the time, safety-wise and stuff like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you know, it's difficult with, you know, people much older and, you know, different, you know, stages in your life and stuff, and you're with a kid, you know, it can make it a little difficult, you know.
I wrestled Matt Stryker like 2 days after my 18th birthday, and he was like, why do I feel like I'm wrestling my nephew right now? Then like in the same weekend that I graduated on a Thursday, that Sunday I was wrestling Matt Stryker at Championship Hollywood again, and he's like, dude, you just graduated high school. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, again, I feel like I'm talking to my nephew.
That is so really,
I always got made fun of that.
That's the thing, though, is, you know, you look at a lot of locker rooms and it is, you know, generally a wide range of ages and people at, you know, different stages of their life and stuff like that. And so, you know, it can't be entirely uncommon for somebody to feel like they're wrestling their own kid or whatever. Yeah, exactly. You know, right. So that's pretty funny that, you know, you know, that was kind of basically your first experience was kind of having that, you know, wide age range and feeling like the child in the room. Kind of with all that, when it came to like early into your career and stuff, like what surprised you the most as you went from somebody that was an amateur wrestler, captain of the wrestling team, all that kind of stuff, to now moving into this professional wrestling world?
Well, at the time it was a little odd for me because I was told not to use any of my amateur wrestling. And it was strictly, again, we've never met before in person. Me and Will have, I'm 5'1". At the time I was 103 pounds. So I was a way smaller guy. So I was always told, don't use any of it with your character. At the time, it didn't make sense. Like, I shouldn't be doing that kind of stuff. I should be just getting quick pop-up victories, anything like that. So I had to water some of that down a little bit. I didn't get to use as much of it. Now I throw in a lot more. I was told that at first, and then when I would kind of sprinkle a little bit in here and there, they would, like, oh yeah, you should use that. I had to like force it in just slightly. Like at the time, it was very odd for me because the character that they had me doing was basically every 80s like underdog ever. So going, it was just weird at the time. I couldn't like really hard because again, I'm a kid. I'm trying to find out who I was as a person. And now I'm trying to find out who I was as a performer and as a wrestler and trying to fit these characters and molds that they want me to do. So it was a little...
Being the underdog, I mean, it's kind of like you're Rudy Rogers. There's a movie about a guy named Rudy in football who was the underdog. Kind of the same presence there, right?
So that's my first name in professional wrestling was Sean Winchester. And I will give you a little story. My first name was Sean Winchester when it came to professional wrestling. And I had done a couple shows here. Championship Wrestling Hollywood does something called the Red Carpet Rumble. It was their first one they were ever doing. It's basically their version of the Royal Rumble. Two guys into that was Willie Mack and LA Knight, Sean Ricker. And today, so they didn't have certain people that were supposed to be in it. Then they needed a spot filled for number three. And so presto changeo, Rudy gets thrown in there. I go out as Sean Winchester. They ribbed me with my music. They had me, I think I came out to thrift shopping by Macklemore or something, just because there's little kids talking in the beginning of it. So they were trying to rib me.
Yeah,
all fun games. I run out there, the entire spot was run out there, Willie and Sean, they're doing their thing, boom boom boom, back and forth. Sean, he flagged me over, he flew me so high I almost hit people in the second row. The boys in the back, they're popping, they have the Rudy chant going, they loved it. Break on TV, they were loving it, they're supportive of it. I get to the back and they asked me again, it was like, well, what was your gimmick name? I was like, oh, Sean Winchester. Like, nah, you're going back to your actual name, you're gonna actually be Rudy, and we want that chant that we got back here in the crowd. I was like, oh, all right. So presto change, I'll switch back to my actual name. That worked really well for me. So I can thank LA Knight and Willie Mack for that.
Yeah, that's super cool. Like, I feel like trying to find your identity and all that kind of stuff can be really difficult. And it seems like it takes a moment like that to, you know, kind of give you a direction, be like, all right, now I have like a path to travel down. Now that someone's kind of said, like, hey, this is what's going to work for you. So, yeah, that's really nice that you're able to get that pretty early on.
And honestly, I hated it at first. I didn't want that to be the name they used for me. I didn't want to use my actual name. It felt weird with me. I really wanted to be Sean Winchester. That was really a character that I felt like I was working with. I was trying to get going. And they're like, no, this is what's going to work. It's going to be well for you. And first, it took maybe about 2-3 months to where I was like, nah, it's like, it's when you buy a pair of jeans that, like, you know, when you first get them, they don't fit right, work with it a little bit, and it just becomes like the best pair of jeans that you've ever owned.
Yeah.
It was that type of thing.
Tell us a little bit about Sean Winchester. Like, what was his character for you?
The Sean Winchester character, it was, there was a lot of like movie jokes and stuff that we, like, I put into the character just like me goofing off with some of the guys from the wrestling school. Like, the character was from Winchester, Tintinville, Iowa, which is a joke from the movie Mr. Deeds, if anybody gets that. I was the, basically, anytime anybody asked what the character was, I would say, I'm the high-flying, profile, and steel horse riding, toughest son of a bastard there is. And that was basically the character. It was the most generic wrestler ever. There was nothing really to it. I thought I had it figured out that it was going to be the greatest thing, but it was generic as shit. I was wearing a pair of plain blue tights and going out there and doing my thing.
I feel like that's one of the hardest things is, like, adding character to who you are. You learn the skills, you learn the moves and stuff like that, but then turning that into an identity is something that people can really struggle with.
I agree with that 100%. And character development is one of my favorite things. Like, I love character aspect of wrestling, and I was trained character-wise and stuff like that. Say I was a Joey Ryan student. He was very character-driven. Everything he did was through character, everything like that. So I got the time to sit down with him and listen to, like, all right, how you work with the character, how you build things, reasons why you do this, why it does that, everything like that. Same with Matt Stryker, sat with me, and he basically, the homework Matt gave me was, who is Rudy? What is this character? Why is he in wrestling? He gave me that homework and told me to come back to him in a month and tell him what I figured out. And at the time, the character that I put together from, like, the pieces that they gave me, everything was, he was the smallest guy in professional wrestling. He was bullied his entire life, and he got tired of being bullied, and he went and found professional wrestling to where he was able to stand up to the bigger dog and try to make a name for himself, to be an inspiration to others, kind of thing. That was the original character. And that sounds pretty generic, but it worked at the time, and they wanted on TV.
So fast forward now, like, what's the origins of Rudy now? Like, who is that to you now?
Rudy Rod, like the rabid Rudy Rogers, the character I do now, everything. Honestly, I had a chance to be a heel originally. Oh, kayfabe broken. Oh, well. I had a chance to be a heel. And for a good portion of my career, I had never that opportunity. So I was given this chance to be a heel, and I started working with it, and I got to really kind of like tinkering things. And I'm like, that felt way better for me than going out there and being a happy-go-lucky baby face. Well, Will, you know I'm an asshole, so you know that works easier for me. Of Rudy Rogers, have you ever seen the movie Goon?
Yes.
Yeah.
So do you know the character Ross Ray? I based a little bit of things off Ross Ray. You might be able to catch certain things now that you know me pretty well. When the movie Goon 2 came out, there was a scene when the coach tells them not that they're going to go out there, they're going to really fuck with you, they're going to try to get underneath your skin. Don't look for shit. Ross goes out there, and the first thing out of his mouth to a guy next to him is, hey, big fella, do you like Kim Mitchell? You're from Canada. Guy looks at him like really weird, like, what the fuck? That's it, we're going. It's like, all right, that was the character. As a heel, he's not to look for shit, shouldn't be doing these certain things, shouldn't want these things, but since you told me not to do it, I'm going to do it anyway, kind of thing. So he's going to look for a fight when he's told not to, no matter what. And the actually real funny thing is I'm actually wearing a Ross Ray jersey right now. Not even kidding. This is actually a Ross Ray jersey from that movie.
Yeah, that's pretty sick. Yeah, and that's fun. Like, I think something that I think a lot of fans like and something that a lot of wrestlers are drawn to is the idea of pulling from things outside of professional wrestling to enhance wrestling. So pulling from characters or music or whatever, that seems like it's something that works really well for a lot of people. And I think your story is a little unique because I don't think most people are looking at hockey movies for their inspiration. but I think it seems to be working really well for you.
Yeah, well, even one of my finishing moves at one point, I called it the hangman's drop. It was something I came up with. It was basically a hangman's neck breaker, but instead of like just hitting and dropping, I held it and like choked the guy with it, spun him out into like drop my knee into it. But that was one of my first finishing moves that I came up with. And I completely stole that from the movie Hitman. Train scene where they're all fighting and he grabs one of the other hitmans by the tie and he hangs him over a metal rail just right over his shoulder. And he's just hanging him and then just drops him and let him go. And I was like, I can figure out how to use that in the ring. And I'm like, that would be really cool. Like, try to figure it out. I did it on a match for Hollywood once, and I was like, all right, well, fuck it, I'll try it out here and see like if I get a reaction from him. Did it, bing, bang, boom, hit, silent, right when he hits. Looks like I killed the guy. I'll send you guys the video of this too. Like, you could hear a pin drop, like, immediately. And then, whoa, like, what the hell? Catch a pin, boom, 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 get to the back. That striker walks, like, beelines up to me. He's like, where the fuck did that come from? I was like, I don't know, I thought of it. It's pretty cool. He was like, I wasn't hitting finishing moves on. My finishing move at the time was a cross body off the top rope into a roll-up pin. That was all I was doing. Ass kick, go up for the cross body, and boom, done. I hit that, and everybody was like, oh, where'd that come from? I was like, I stole it from a movie. Nobody believed me.
That's crazy. That's stupid crazy.
Yeah, that is awesome, though. That's just another example of how you can find wrestling anywhere, and you can pull inspirations from anything. So it seems like we kind of have gathered that for you, it seems like movies are something that you really enjoy or something that you pull from a lot.
Is that movies, true? Comic books, yeah, just anything in general that I love storytelling. So even when I'm working on storylines and matches and stuff like that, I'm a real big Shakespeare guy. So I love storytelling. I love just being drawn in by stories. So that's like my biggest inspiration is just anything that has a story to it.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So for you then, kind of thinking about wrestling, right? It seems like there's a lot of different things that really draw you to wrestling. Like when you really think about wrestling at the end of the day, like what do you think is like the best thing about professional wrestling?
The best part of professional wrestling is it gives, I'll go in my personal life and then how I feel about it in a broad spectrum as well. My personal life, I feel it's the greatest form of art that you could possibly have. The best way that I could creatively be myself, to me, I feel like I am more myself when I am wrestling than I do in an everyday life. I don't feel like I play a character in the ring. I feel like I play a character in real life and then have to go back and forth kind of thing. But from the moment that I go through the curtain to the moment I come back, that's when I feel like I'm actually a person. That's where I feel the most at home. I feel natural in that state. Do I get butterflies? Absolutely. We all do. But that is where I feel like I'm actually me as a person. And that is, it's my passion. It's who I am at this point. In next year, I'll be able to literally say I've wrestled for half of my life. Next year, and I'd be wrestling for 15 years at that point. So at this point, it is literally in my DNA. It's meet me in the streets ever, and you ask me, hey, what do you do for a living? Professional wrestler. That's what I am. It's who I am. You have guys that are like, oh, what do you do for a living? Oh, I drive a forklift. I drive a school bus. I do this. I do that. Professional wrestling is who I am. That is what I am down to the core.
So I got a question for you. When you're getting ready to like go into a match, do you have like any superstitions to you or anything
like rituals?
Like rituals that you do before you get into the ring?
Yes and no. Like questions I also have to take. Like now, a little bit older, my body is not what it once was. The amount of tape, you've seen how much I've had to tape up my knee. We'll get into that injury later on. But honestly, I try to sit there and I just try to calm myself as best as I possibly can. One of the things I haven't been able to do it as much lately, and it drives me insane that I don't get to. I've been running around like a chicken with my head cut off at times, trying to get things going, figure stuff out. I sit there and I'll play like Beethoven on my headset. I'll listen to Beethoven, trying to calm myself, trying to collect my thoughts, get myself to where I need to be. And then it's also just a lot of mine is just a mental aspect that gets me to where I need to be. I'll go and watch, like, I'll listen to certain songs that draw me back to something that drew me to professional wrestling when I was a kid, or that like just kind of gave me that love for it. So then it gives me that motivation to where I just always, in my head right before I go, I just like, let me fly. That's all I think. And I just go out and do my thing. Whether I'm out going out there yelling at people and throwing water in their faces and having people try to fight me.
You mentioned that you have to give a lot of attention to your knee. What exactly happened there?
So I used to ride a motorcycle exclusively. I want to say 2 years ago now, I was riding my Harley Davidson and a lady was texting and driving and she turned into me and I flipped my motorcycle 9 times.
Holy shit.
I broke my leg. It was a tib-fib fracture. It took me out of wrestling for 9 months. It was supposed to have taken me. I am very stubborn, though. It would have been in 2021 is when I was in my motorcycle accident.
Okay. Oh, wow. So coming up
August. It was August 1st of 2021. Professional wrestling also saved my life, guys. I can 100% tell you that. Everybody freaked out that was witnesses to it. They thought I was dead. I even have Facebook posts from the city that I live in. or the small town that I live in, where people are like, oh, a motorcycle accident. Victim is a person is now deceased. They tried to airlift him. He died. I'm like, no, I'm still alive. What the fuck? All that went through my head when I was flipping was hold on to the bike, because if I don't, I'm going to fly and I'm going to go splat. I'm done. My helmet had a scratch about that big on it. Literally that big. That was the only scratch I had on it. It tumbled. I went down. I kind of like sat there to try to assess the situation. I feel like I'm okay. Then sure enough, I go to get up on my left side and I look down and my boot just starts dangling and flopping.
Oh my God.
I was like, oh, nope. Like that's broken. So I laid right back down. And now I have a metal rod from my knee down to my ankle. And I have six screws in that leg as well.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I returned way earlier than I was scheduled supposed to be. They told me 2 to 3 years was the recovery time. I returned, the accident happened in August, and I returned in May of the following year.
Holy crap. Wow.
Yeah, like just a couple months later, I came back. I did a small match in, like a quick little tester thing to see what I could do. But officially having an actual match was where I really count my return was in May. And so, that was.
How did that accident and that injury alter your wrestling style?
At the time, my biggest worry was I couldn't run when I came back. Mm-hmm. I was able to do a lot of things. I would work with people. I was very protective of my leg at first, and I would wrestle, and I couldn't run. Like, if you whip me to the ropes, I could hit and come back to you. That was it. You hit me, and like you duck a line or something, I had to go again. I was not coming back. I was not going to make it. My leg felt like it was hyperextending too much. I had to retape up and stuff. So I limited that down. Any running in my matches, I limited. I don't run the ropes as much anymore. Mm-hmm. And now that's not even an aspect that comes to mind. Just try to steer away from that. And I did it first, and now I don't really try to do it, but it still translates, and it's not there as much anymore from what I've noticed. I'm not running the ropes as much. I'm doing a little bit more technical stuff. If somebody's hitting the ropes, it's boom, they hit it on their own. They're coming back to me, or they're trying to hit something on me. I'm not whipping somebody in the ropes. I'm not trying to whip them. They're not really reversing. It's not anything like that too much anymore. I was no longer able to, and it scared everyone the shit out of me. So I was working Vito Fratelli in a match. It was 2022 in October. We had a spot where Rand hit him with the head scissor. He goes out of the ring, and it's basically our double down kind of spot, but I was going to do a suicide dive on the outside to him. And I'm laying there, and I could hear the count going, and I'm like, the old me would have just kipped up like right at 9. Fuck it, let's see how this goes. So I did it, landed, and like, they have a picture of me where I have a slight shock look on my face, like, oh, I could do that again. And did the suicide dive, hit it no problem. And from then on, I was like, all right, let's see what else I could do. And I was able to do pretty much almost everything. The only thing that I've noticed that I can't do, I used to do that RVD thing where he'd grab the ropes and then jump to the top rope.
Yep.
This knee just doesn't bend the same way as much anymore. So when I go, my toe will just catch ever so slightly. So I can't do that anymore. Other than that, I could do absolutely everything I used to do, which is benefit.
So I know you're out of Cali. One of your, I would say one of your biggest friends is Mikey O'Shea, right?
Yes, I have known Mikey since my very beginning. I can even tell you about the first time I ever met Mikey, if you'd like to hear that.
Sure, sure, go ahead.
First time I ever met Mikey was at a Mach 1 training. I was so after that Wednesday that I told you where Johnny and allowed me to come in, the way that they ran their classes, it was beginners on Mondays and Wednesdays. Those are the beginner classes. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, those were the advanced classes that like the veterans would go to and everything. So that Thursday, like I was told I could just go to any. So I was like, fuck it, I'm going to every single one of them. So I showed up that Thursday. I'm early and before everybody else, I'm sitting outside. Mikey shows up. The door is unlocked. Mikey's like, hey, let's go in. He's like, I want to practice hitting somebody with a jackknife powerbomb. Can I do that to you? Have in mind, I have like taken one bump. I've learned how to take one bump. Sure, why not? So we get in the ring and Mikey's hitting me with jackknife powerbombs before anybody gets there. About 5-10 minutes after taking like 4 or 5 of them at this point, Joey Ryan comes in. He's like, Mikey, what are you doing? He's not trained. I got a bump yesterday. You didn't fucking tell me. Everybody freaked out. They're like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I guess the only way to learn is to just do it.
What could go wrong?
That's literally been the story of my wrestling career. Oh, fuck it. What could go wrong? I can't get hurt worse. Let me try. Let me go and do this. Then I actually got to tag team with Mikey for a little while. Me and Mikey were a tag team at a lot of lucha shows and stuff like that. And we were doing a lot of things. And we were always laughing because we would do something. And then like 2 weeks later, we'd see Cesaro and Tyson Kidd doing the same thing. And we were like, God damn it, they're watching our lucha shit, like laughing about it. We knew they weren't, but it was just the funniest fucking thing to us. Like, I think if you look on my, if you really dig on my old Facebook post, there's a screenshot of Tyson Kidd dropping an elbow off of Cesaro's like shoulders. And I was like, I just did that like last weekend off Mikey. What the fuck?
Oh, that's amazing. Well, that's really cool. Like, that's somebody that I think, you know, fans from around him know who he is. He's got his social media stuff and having some cool wrestling memories like that, I think is, pretty awesome. Nice.
The list goes on and on. Yeah. Like, honestly, I have all these memories. Like, I've been in locker rooms with so many people, like so many really cool people. Like, I've been around Jake the Snake, like a lot of really big names. But this is a little tangent for you. My leg, and I was hurt, and I really wondering if I was going to be able to do it again or be able to do anything. I had no pictures with anybody. And that was like my biggest thing. Like, so if anybody that's watching is getting into professional wrestling, they're new to this and they're being told, don't be a mark. Don't take pictures of people. Fuck that bullshit. Take pictures of absolutely everybody. Have your fucking memories, because I almost had it taken away from me and I didn't have any. The guy that ran my school that let me train for free and basically took me in at times when I was being a stupid teenage kid, I had no pictures with him. I had no pictures with anybody. I was in locker rooms with Paul Bearer, Percy Pringle, and I got to hang out with him at Gorilla Position and run sound and shit. And I have no pictures of that. And that drives me insane. AJ Styles was at a show with us. Matt Hardy, Colt Cabana, list goes on and on. And I had no pictures of any of this. Like, pictures that someone took of us, like random, like I would have random little ones, but I had nothing to, and that's, it broke my heart. Like, I was like, God, like, if this ended today and I don't get to go back to it, when I have kids, if I mention it or I bring it up to them or I tell a story of it, they're going to think dad's making some bullshit up and that he was a professional wrestler at 5 foot fucking one and not have any tangible evidence to show for it or like the people that he's met, you know? Mm-hmm. And that like really broke me, because I'm then also like, scares the shit out of me. So my memory, I'm like, I'm afraid I'm gonna forget things and not remember it. And I see the look on your face. Don't you dare mention me doing the diving headbutt in CTE, son of a bitch.
Yes, you did, motherfucker. I didn't forget.
I do the diving headbutt all the fucking time, let's be honest. Like, do we want to go into the people that influenced me to become a wrestler now, I guess, dude? God damn it.
No, because I already know the answer.
You don't know all the answers to that.
I know some of them. I know more than one. Yeah.
You've asked me that. Your pal doesn't know it. People don't know.
Yeah, let us know. The world wants to know.
The world wants to know.
Will is a selfish motherfucker. He wants to keep it all to himself. Growing up, my influences to become a professional wrestler, like watching, was Shawn Michaels being one. Shawn Michaels, I feel like, is the greatest showman and performer of all time. Real big fan of Chris Jericho growing up. Dean Malenko. Any of the Radicals, basically, was very high on my list. I know that's controversial to say, but taken a lot of stuff from Chris Benoit and made it my own now. Like, again, I don't condone anything that he's done in his life, but that was a big influence on my life growing up. One that I'm a really good friend with that was a big influence on me while watching as a kid was Brian Kendrick. And I've even told him that to his face. I'm like, hey, growing up, I didn't have a father figure. So my father figure was professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. And I told him, you, Eddie, Chris Benoit, Chavo Guerrero, like all these guys were my father figure. That was what I looked at as a positive male role model.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. That's pretty cool that you got to tell them that yourself. That's something that you held on to stuff like that, but being able to actually tell someone like how much they mean to you or how much they influenced you.
Now he's a really good friend and we get to travel together. So that's always something really cool that I love that I have now.
Yeah, that's incredible. I think that's awesome. I think your stories today have been amazing. We've learned a lot of really cool stuff, and you've had some crazy times and you've learned a lot of stuff along the way. I think anybody listening to this interview, like, they're going to be like, man, this guy's awesome. I got to go see him wrestle. But
oh no, I'm trash.
Not all fans not all fans are easily sold. We know that some guys just need a little bit more.
Those are absolutely my favorite fans.
I love that type of fan. Yeah, okay. So for your favorite type of fan, that needs more selling, right? Needs a little more push and to have you come see you wrestle. What's your pitch to those fans on why they should come see you?
First thing with fans like that is I first go out through the curtain, 5'1", it's shit talk, usually. At some point, like, if I'm a heel, it's a lot of shit talk. If I'm a face, they're like, oh, yeah, underdog, yeah, good shit. When I wrestle is to make them, by the time the match is over, they forget how tall I am. I take very much pride that I feel like I am able to do that. During the match, that little notion of my height, a lot of people that come up to me and even say that, like, dude, yeah, you don't wrestle like you're a small guy, because I don't do high flying stuff. I'm not a high flyer. I don't really, I'll do one or two things. I used to do a lot of high flying stuff. I can tell you, it's another name drop on the reason why I stopped. I used to do a lot of high flying stuff, and Matt Stryker told me to stop it. And he told me to preserve my body, to learn how to tell a story and learn how to preserve myself and ultimately just engage a crowd a little bit better and be able to work. Because the whole thing was, if moonsaults every show doing all this kind of bullshit, and then I'm on a show with the Young Bucks. Okay, cool. We just saw all that shit done and nobody gives a fuck. I go out there and I wrestle and I make something look a little bit more mean, or make it look a little bit more legitimate. And everything I do is try to give it a legitimate feel to it. I'll German suplex people. And people are like, oh, you can do a German suplex. I can legit German suplex half the locker room in a shoot German. Because to me, if I throw a punch and I miss by a mile, or I barely scrape the guy, one fan that has never watched professional wrestling a day in his life, that's been saying it's fake his entire life, sitting in the crowd, he saw that. Professional wrestling is ruined for life for that guy. He will never want to watch it again because he sees it's fake. If I go out there and I hit you and I make it look good, and he's like, oh, fuck, yeah, that right there, man. I know they're working together, but I think he really hit him there. That guy sold for life. He's going to come back. That guy is going to be a ticket that he's always going to be coming back. He wants to see that now because he doesn't know what's real and what's fake. If I mess up, it was part of it.
Right. So that's our time, man. And I want to take the time and thank you for coming on our show, bro. It's been a long waiting.
Glad we finally got it to work.
Yeah, finally, finally. And guys, as always, you never know who will be across the ring. With my head spinning on Nashville, it's been mad real. I need sunglasses, I need Advil. I like fake boobs and my cash real.